Turn, if you will, over to Matthew chapter 7, and we'll be looking at a verse here just for a minute, which will be our focus this morning. If you grew up going to church, most likely you can remember when you were very young having a memory verse each week. And my guess is that when you look at Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, you'll realize you really didn't even have to look at Matthew 7 and verse 12. Because this is one of the verses that we teach children from a very early age. And so if you note what it says here, it says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Of course, when I say that in my mind, it's always in the King James form, because I remember learning that as a very small child. If you learn that, that's a good thing. Because this verse tells us that we have a tremendous responsibility to each other. But if you learn that, it can also be a bad thing. Because sometimes when we learn a verse very early on, we almost want to kind of relegate that down to kids' scripture. And to say, well, that's verses that we teach kids. And if we have that attitude that we've known this verse for so long that we really don't appreciate it like we should, we need to come back and we need to understand that indeed this is one of the key principles of Christianity. I don't know who it was who first coined the term the golden rule for this verse, but it's pretty good. When we think about the purity and when we think about the value of gold, even today with it shooting up to over $1,800 an ounce, we understand that it's something very precious. And so should this verse be to us. And the idea behind this verse for us. This passage is a command for our lives. And this morning I want us to think about this verse. I want us to explore the ideas and to understand what God expects of us when we put the golden rule into place here for the Christians of Gooch Lane. But as we think about that, I want to start out on a little bit of a negative note. What are the things that can cause us to tarnish the golden rule? What are the things that can happen in our lives, attitudes that we can hold, that can cause problems to occur? Well, I would suggest to us that we can sum that up by saying probably the biggest problem that we face in putting these kinds of things into our practices in life is ourselves. When we look at the attitudes that we have and hold that we ought not, many times they are going to prohibit us from exercising this verse as Jesus told us to exercise it. Consider just a few thoughts with me in this regard. As we think about Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 13, Solomon lays it on the line here, and he says, "The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate." If God says He hates something, we need to pay attention to it. And as we look at this verse, two of the things God says that He hates that I think stand as obstacles to application of this verse are the ideas of pride and what follows very closely after pride, in fact almost a byproduct or a result of it, is the idea of an arrogant attitude. Pride prohibits us from seeing past ourselves. Pride keeps all the attention focused on us, and therefore we cannot see the needs of others. And when we allow that to grip us and to maintain its hold on our heart, we then gain that very arrogant attitude of rather than being the disciple that I need to be, the servant that I need to be, instead I have the expectation of others to serve me. So certainly, as we look at pride and arrogance, they stand as obstacles to following this very godly principle. We think as well about another attitude, I think very well illustrated in the church at Laodicea. As we look at chapter 3 and verse 17, we have somewhat of a description of them here. And the Lord is saying to them, "For you say, I am rich, I have prospered, and I need nothing, not realizing that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked." I think another quality, or lack of quality perhaps, that keeps us from being able to see the golden rule as we ought, is when we are centered on ourselves. Think about the church there at Laodicea. Basically, what they had told the Lord is, we need nothing from you. Though we would have considered ourselves a church of Christ, they might say, what you have to offer is nothing that we really are in need of. And the Lord brings out very clearly in this passage that very arrogant attitude that they held, that you look and you say, I don't need anything, to the standpoint of, you can't see how poor and pitiable and blind and miserable and wretched that you actually are. That's what self-centeredness will do for us. We think as well about another idea. James 3:16 tells us, for where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. I think we can sum up everything that we've seen thus far in this word of selfishness. The idea that the world revolves around me. The idea that I am the best. The idea that others should take care of my needs is the idea that self is coming first and standing in the way of others. Now let me put one more with this list that might not be quite as apparent as these. I think one other thing we can add to our list of things that tarnish the golden rule is just the plain old idea of not thinking. It may not be anything as sinister as pride and arrogance. It may not be self-centeredness, at least on the surface, and it might not be selfishness, at least on the surface. But the idea that there are those who are in need, but that's just not in my scope. It's not that I don't want to help. It's not that I've got any real problem with helping somebody. It's just the fact that I'm not looking for opportunity. And I think probably of all the things I have listed here, while they are all temptations for us, probably for Christians, this last one may be the biggest. That we're just simply in a situation where we're not considering these things and not thinking. So with all of this being said, what then must we do to take the golden rule seriously? As we look at Matthew 7:12, and if we agree, yes, this is fundamental gospel doctrine for every Christian, fundamental for every one of us to practice, what is it that I need to do to take it more seriously? I think we know where it starts, don't we? It's the idea that it begins with our attitude toward God. If I am going to take anything God said seriously, I first got to take Him seriously. The reading that we had this morning was that very idea. Here they were trying to trap Jesus and catch Him. And so someone says, Teacher, what is the greatest law? Thinking that maybe He would slip up, but there was no chance of that. And as we heard read, Jesus said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. If we're saying, yes, I need to take Matthew 7:12 more seriously, caring for others more seriously, here is where I begin. I look at my attitude toward God. And when I look at Him, as the old song says, I can then see such a worm as I really am. I understand that I am deserving nothing. And I believe that's what John was alluding to when he said in 1 John 4:19, we love, why? Because He first loved us. He began thinking about everything that God has done. And we come to grips with the fact that His mercy is not what we deserve. His mercy is what we need. And I tell you, when you start thinking about God's mercy, suddenly that list of things of pride and arrogance and selfishness, they all seem awfully out of place, don't they? We see that they just don't fit with the kind of life that a Christian is to be living. And thus, we can see God as He truly is. Now, when we see God for who He truly is, it's at that point then we can begin taking on the second greatest command, Remember, Jesus answered their question, and he went a step further, and he says, the second unto it is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now, is that the golden rule? Yes. When Matthew 7:12 speaks of that idea of whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. Here we've got the root of that. It is looking out for the interest of others. It's looking for the things that they would have us to do. And Jesus states, on these hang all the law and the prophets. As he was talking to this Jewish man about the greatest command in the law and the second like unto it, he said, I want you to understand everything flows from that. It's well illustrated in the Ten Commandments, isn't it? You look at the commandments that are telling us the respect that we are to have for God. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall have for yourselves no graven images. He goes through a list of things to be done for God. And then he says, there are things that are to be done for others. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't kill. Don't steal. You know, all of these things. God is saying, Christ is saying, hangs the law and the prophets. Well, as the Constitution for the Kingdom was written, as so the Sermon on the Mount has sometimes been called, God wanted us to understand that's not out. Though the law of Moses was fulfilled, and we are no longer under that law, there were principles brought from it and put firmly into place in Christianity. And one of those is the care and the need that we are to show for other people. So self is washed away in what we can do to serve others by serving God. Now, at this point, we could take the lesson in a number of directions. But what I'd like to do this morning is to focus on two ideas. And I promise you, I am not going to focus on these ideas exhaustively, or we would be exhausted because we would be here till sometime next week. Let me, though, bring up two very broad categories where I think that we, as Christians, are oftentimes put to the test. And this is not to exclude any others or to say other areas aren't important in following this idea laid out by the Lord. But two areas where I think all of us need to make sure that we're practicing the command that we find in the Sermon on the Mount of caring for the needs of others. When we think about the lives that we have as a family, I think all of us would understand that it's a test. And marriage itself is a very major test of the golden rule. When we think about someone to whom we're committing for the rest of the time we have on this earth, we understand that that person is going to see us in a light that no other person will. There are going to be characteristics and qualities and attitudes and emotions seen that may be masked from everybody else, and that's probably a good thing. But as we think about the golden rule, I think one of the things we've got to understand is that it must very much be applied in our homes, and it must be applied between husbands and wives. Failure to do that will make our spiritual journey in this life much, much harder. I remember several years ago, my sister was living in Canada at the time, and we decided that we would take a very winding route up to visit her, and we just kind of meandered up the East Coast or close to it. And Wednesday night found us in Dover, Delaware. And we wanted to stop for Bible study. There was a group that met there. And so we did. And we found the address, and it was in a very rundown part of town. And it was a storefront was what it is. And, you know, I kind of peeped my head in the door to make sure that was the right place. And it was. There were about 15 Christians who were meeting there. It's an interracial group. And the topic of the Bible study that evening was love, the idea of showing love. And the subject kind of drifted over toward love being shown in the family. And I remember, you know, you run across people who you'd love to be able to spend some time with. I would love to have spent some time with this woman. Elderly lady, happened to be black. She said, the teacher was teaching these things, and she spoke up. And she said, let me just tell you, sometimes I tell my husband, John, you sure do make it hard to be a Christian. And I thought about that. Of course, I laughed to myself the rest of the evening, but I've thought about that a whole lot since that time. What'd she understand? She obviously had a husband who didn't practice the golden rule. She had a husband who was making her spiritual journey much more difficult. And the question is, if we're married, are we doing that? Well, the Lord has said, I want you to understand that there are things that you must be doing for others. And we must take heed of those things that God has said. We think about 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. Peter writes, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Is that the golden rule? An understanding way. Showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Men have an awful tendency to be rough and tumble with emotions. And Peter is saying here, you've got to dwell with your wives as a weaker vessel. In other words, she is not a female male. She is a woman different in emotional makeup than a man. And Peter says that is not to be viewed as a weakness in the sense that there's anything wrong with it. But it's to be viewed by a man as something that's precious, something that's to be cared for. Why? Because a husband must realize that failure to do that may make her spiritual journey more hard. It may mean that we make it rough on her trying to make it to heaven. And a man simply cannot do that to his wife. On the other hand, we also find that Paul, in writing to Titus, said, here's something that I want you to teach the older ladies. Train the young women to love their husbands and children. You ever thought about that verse? Train them to do that? Teach them to do it? In our convoluted ideas, in our generation, that romantic love is all there is to it. Paul said to Titus, teach them. Tell those older women to teach them how to love their husbands. Why? Because a woman's got to realize that a man is different. And she's got to respect and she's got to appreciate that. And she's got to do the things for him that are going to help him make it to heaven. And I can with 100% certainty say that if you have two people in a marriage who are working to help the other get to heaven, you are going to have a wonderful marriage. Marriages falter when it's pride and arrogance and selfishness and just not thinking that get in the way and tarnish the golden rule in that marriage. Practicing this, though, will help us each to see God more clearly. And second unto it, I believe that the parent-child relationship is a great test. Parents and kids have interesting relationships, don't they? You've got various times that you're looking toward in a child's life of trying to be there and help, from the time of most dependent to the time when that child is trying to break away on his or her own. But nonetheless, the Apostle Paul said this, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. We know the book of Proverbs in many ways has generalities. And God is not giving us 100% locked guarantee, because free will is always present in a child who becomes an adult. But more times than not, when parents train their children correctly, those children are going to turn out to be good, young, solid Christians. So how does the golden rule enter into this? Well, a parent has got to recognize that his or her behavior toward a child may very well impact that child's eternity. And so in those growing up years, it may mean that we say no, when yes would be a whole lot more popular. That a parent comes down and says no, because the parent knows the situation, knows the people involved, knows what could happen, and just said that's not going to happen. That's hard to do. A lot of parents like to be popular. You know, it's always nice to have your children just fawning all over you of how great you are. Sometimes that just can't be the way that it is if you're practicing the golden rule. Conversely, though, sometimes it may mean saying yes when no would be a whole lot easier. When there are situations that a child is involved in that in the long run are going to help that child in developing, where no would be the easier answer for a parent, the parent commits to whatever it's going to take for that child to succeed in this particular whatever that may help him or her to be a much better person later in life. Whatever the case, it means putting self aside for a child's spirituality. It means that you empty yourself of pride and arrogance and selfishness, and you put that child first. But now on the other hand, I believe there's obligations for children in dealing with parents with golden rule principles as well. Sometimes we don't focus on this as much, but a child who is old enough to understand is a child who should understand that he or she has responsibilities in caring for the spiritual needs of parents. That sounds a little odd, doesn't it? Because we focus so much on parents taking care of kids and providing. And yes, that's where most of it's going to come. But there are things that children need to understand in helping their parents spiritually. And I believe one of the biggest of those is what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. He says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise," or a primary commandment that you're to follow. One of the greatest tests that kids face in life, first, is that of obedience to parents. So where does the golden rule come in all of this? Well, submitting, even though rebellion gets your way, is a sign that you understand what the Lord has said in looking out for the needs of others. Whatever you would that men should do to you, whatever you would that your parents should do to you. And so it may be that you can whine and fuss and cry and yell and slam doors and finally wear them down. But is that right? Is that godly? Is that a young Christian maturing into spirituality? No. And I would say with that as well, it's behaving appropriately without a parent having to follow up with a threat. Immaturity is present in children. That's a wise saying, isn't it? Kids are kids. And there are times when there's going to be immaturity that must be threatened out. But there should be a time when a child reaches a particular stage when that child says, "I'm going to do it because God said." Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Not because I agree, not because I think my parents know it all, but because I think the Lord knows it all. I'm going to tell you something else. If you've got a husband and wife who are showing the golden rule, and you've got parents and children that are showing the golden rule, you're going to have a nice house. You're going to have a happy household. But let any one of those get tarnished, and it's going to bring trouble because God is not being honored within that household. One other way I'd like to illustrate this lesson. The golden rule at home is important, but also the golden rule in the local church is very important as well. Family situations are difficult, and spiritual family relationships can also be quite challenging. When we think about the relationship that we have as Christians, you think about this congregation as just an example. You've got what? 230, 240 personalities that are interworking, meshing together. You get that many people going together, there is a need for the practice of the golden rule. Wherever you are, if you have more than one person present, at some point you're going to have a difference. You're going to have things that need to be considered. And whatever local congregation of which you're a member, that's the case. And as we think about showing that here, let me just mention a couple of things, just to illustrate our point. When we think about showing the golden rule in a local congregation, I believe one of those times that it's going to come out very clearly is in our times of worship. Now, what do I mean by that? When we come together to worship, we should realize that we're doing the most important thing we could be doing. This morning we have approached the throne room of God. We've prayed to Him, we've sang to Him, we've remembered the death of His Son. We've broken the bread of life together in His Word. I need to take those times seriously. And when I do that, it means that I must work, first of all, to realize its importance in my life, in what I'm doing. But second of all, I've got to work to not be a distraction to others. All right, this is one of those points. I've got to make a disclaimer right off the bat, so let me do it. I know there are times when people come who are not feeling well, who are hurting, who just have lots of physical difficulties. I'm not talking to you. When I do lessons like this, sometimes the very ones that I don't want to get the point, they're the ones who take it the most seriously. And I guess there's something about character in that. I understand there are times when we have to get up and we have to go out. And I tell you, I've dealt with enough back problems to know that there are some times when your back says you are not sitting 1 minute longer and you're up. But what about those times when I don't need to get up? Those times when I'm just going to get up for the sake of moving about. There's something I need to realize in that. Whoever sees me, I've been a distraction. I've broken concentration. I've taken the mind off what's going on, at least temporarily. All of us have a duty to get back on track as quickly as possible. But I think one of the ways of exercising the golden rule is just simply to say in something as seemingly small as this, is I am not going to distract someone else in their worship of God if I can help it. And if all of us take that attitude, all of us saying I'm looking out for the needs of others, I think we would find times of worship being far less distracted than perhaps what we see from time to time. And that also may mean that I've got to consider where I sit. Think about your location. Hey, if you are a healthy individual and 99% sure you're not going to have to get up, probably these front benches would be the better place to sit, wouldn't it? Because there are times when there are people who aren't feeling well, and there are times when those who have very serious physical problems, and there are times when visitors come into an assembly who feel kind of uncomfortable walking down to the front, where we, if we're looking out for the needs of others, could make accommodation for that, couldn't we? Leaving benches toward the back open for mothers with fussy babies and people who aren't feeling well and people with physical difficulties. Visitors who perhaps aren't terribly comfortable coming up. Maybe scooting in just a bit. Where if there's a parent with a small child who's likely to have to get up and go out, won't have to crawl over someone else. You see, all those things are just little things. They're things that maybe we don't think about. But if I'm looking out for the needs of others, I'm going to say whatever I can do to make sure that another's worship is not interrupted, I'm going to do that. What about parents who have these little ones coming in? I think the golden rule is seen in exercising patience. I'm going to tell you something. I have a very, very special place in my heart for parents with babies. I just love to be around parents with little kids. It's fun to watch, for one thing. But secondly, you just kind of see that generational continuation. You see parents bringing kids in who are going to train those kids to be right. But when those babies are babies, it's very difficult sometimes to get their will to bend to your will. And there may be times when I am sitting in the vicinity of someone who has a child who is just not having a good morning. I have an obligation there to show the golden rule. I can remember growing up, the congregation I was in, there was a woman who I believe could turn her head 180 degrees to look at every baby crying in the assembly. You think she was practicing the golden rule, making those parents feel a little bit less self-conscious about what was going on? I'm going to tell you, a congregation that does not hear the cry of babies is a congregation in trouble. It's a congregation that will not be around a whole lot longer. And so perhaps there are times that we can show the golden rule by not bringing attention to something. Or even better yet, if there's a time when I can help out, I can remember when Ethan was very, very young. I was preaching, and here was Pam. She had another one tending to, and a baby she was tending to, and I was in a situation I couldn't help. There was an older lady in that congregation who made the point to sit with her every time. And if one of the kids needed to go out, the other one went to this lady. I'm going to tell you, that was the golden rule. Here all these years later, I still have a very, very fond memory of that help that was given. And in a situation like ours, where there's lots of people who have moved into the area, who don't have the convenience of family, who can't pass it off to a grandma or a grandpa, having someone there to help may make all the difference. Let's practice the golden rule in that regard. But those kids are going to get older. And so as parents, we need to practice the golden rule in teaching our older children to show reverence in the assembly. You know, it's difficult to do because here you're bringing a child into a very unnatural feeling for that child. Sit still, be quiet, don't be a distraction. But that's training. If it was something that came naturally, there would be no training involved in it. And while I may not can help an infant or a little one who's having a rough morning, when that child's getting on up, school age or thereabouts, that child needs to start learning. And if I'm just kind of letting that child go and not really reining him or her in, I may not be showing the golden rule to those around me, being a distraction to those who are around me. It's those kinds of things that I believe we need to consider. I think as well, we should understand in exercising the golden rule toward those who visit our assemblies. If you visit somewhere, do you desire a warm, a friendly, welcome, greeting? I can remember quite well a congregation my family and I visited. We stood at the back for a while after worship was over. And of that congregation, I could probably count on one hand with a few fingers left over the number of people who spoke to us. Well, did I feel like I was there for somebody to have to speak to me? No. I was there for a purpose. But nonetheless, I can still remember that group and I can still remember that feeling. And so I believe as we're showing the golden rule, we need to understand that. There may be those who are visiting our assembly who we'll never see again, just passing through. But there may also be those who need help. Those who are looking for truth. And it may very well be in my showing the golden rule to those people that I may be able to help them on their spiritual journeys. Let's practice that as we see those who are visiting with us. And finally, let me just say we need to be practicing the golden rule outside of the assembly as well. Remember what the Apostle Paul said, Colossians 3? He said, "Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another." I'm going to give you a real simple statement here, but one that has a big impact. Christians need other Christians as friends. And if when I am done here, I'm going to have nothing else to do with my spiritual family until we come back here, I'm not providing the services that I need. I'm not exercising the golden rule in bearing with the needs of others. These are things I think that perhaps we would put in the category of just not thinking. But what I want to encourage all of us to do this morning is to think about these things. And if we're doing them, to get better at them. If we're not doing them, to start doing them. Because in every facet of our lives, the golden rule has its place. And as we've looked at this morning with our physical families and our spiritual families, if we are exercising these things just as God intends, we are loving our neighbors as ourselves, and we are helping somebody else on the road to heaven. Just a few small things might just make really big differences.